Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001. Those Who Care.
Hello. I wish that my people were a little more in touch with the real world. To say that a different way, I wish that they did not cling so tightly to the temporary and artificial world of comfort and security in which most urban, middle-class, white Americans spend most of their time these days. I talk about real things that are happening all around us, things such as the horrible rapes and murders of four young white people in Wichita, Kansas, 3 weeks ago by non-white animals whom we should not even permit to live on the same planet with us. Animals whom we support with welfare programs so that they can breed more of their kind. Whom we send to school with our own children. To whom we give the protection of our laws. Whom we flatter by telling them that they are equal to us. I could tell you about such things every week, about the invasions of white homes by black rapists and killers, about white women abducted by black carjackers, then raped and murdered. I could tell you about such things every week because they happen every week in this country. And I think that most of you believe me when I tell you about these things. You understand that I'm not making them up or even exaggerating. I'm sure that many of you, after I tell you where to look, check out at least one of my black-on-white crime reports for yourself, and then you believe, then you understand. And of course, it follows that those of you who believe the reports I give you also must believe me when I tell you that the Jewish media bosses deliberately cover these things up because, in fact, they are covered up. You still haven't heard about the Wichita rapes and murders I told you about last week, except from me. Remember, I'm not talking about the Lemmings now. The Lemmings never understand anything. I received a hate letter from a Lemming right after last week's broadcast, and it was clear that she didn't believe me. She was sure I had made it all up in order to generate animosity against blacks. She wrote to me, and I quote, "I am embarrassed and shocked that after so many years of pain and suffering by all people, you come along and spread your venom like it is the truth. The unfortunate thing is that there are people out there who will believe your lies." End of quote. She went on to say a few nasty things about me personally and to let me know that she was praying to her God for my speedy demise. You know, I'm sure that if one spread out in front of this woman the news reports from the Wichita Eagle, she would refuse to look at them. She would be sure that it was some sort of trick to test her political correctness. She knows that blacks don't do the sort of thing they did in Wichita last month, because she has been taught by television that blacks are morally superior to white people. And certainly the Jews would never lie to us about such things, because the Jews also are morally superior people. If we kidnapped this woman and dragged her forcibly to Wichita to speak with the police and with witnesses there, she would close her eyes and put her hands over her ears. She doesn't want to know the truth. She is, as the psychologists would say, in denial, along with all the rest of the Lemmings, because that's the way Lemmings are. But most of you who listen to my broadcasts do believe and do understand. And for that reason, I do not belabor you with reports of black-on-white crimes every week. Usually, I talk about such things when I want to use them as an example to illustrate an idea. But I do talk about them often enough so that everyone who listens regularly is aware of the crimes being committed against our people. Everyone understands that they are real crimes and that our deadliest enemies, those who are working day and night, year after year, for the extinction of our people, are those who suppress the news of these crimes, those who try to keep us from knowing about what is happening, and who also keep the lemmings hypnotized with ball games and soap operas and smiley-faced news commentators telling us that we are living in the best of all possible worlds. You know, in a healthy world, in a just world, the suppression of that one news story about what happened in Wichita last month would be sufficient reason to clean the whole tribe out, to get them out of our society root and branch. It would justify having 100 men with shotguns going into each major media headquarters building in New York City and cleaning it out, starting with the ground floor and working their way up, pulling the scriptwriters and the editors and the news directors and the spin doctors and all the rest of them out from under their desks and executing them on the spot. It would justify sealing off Hollywood with tanks and cleaning the place out block by block. But we don't do a thing. We just pull our security blankets around us a little tighter and refuse to deal with the real world. In Russia and other places in Eastern Europe, a century ago, we at least used to organize pogroms occasionally. Jewish behavior in a town or a district finally would overtax the patience of the people, and they would clean the Jews out, which would cause the Jews in surrounding areas to keep their heads down for a while. But the pogroms never were done systematically or on a sufficiently large scale. And so, eventually, the Jews got the upper hand by organizing the Bolshevik Revolution. And then they systematically murdered 30 million or so of our people, Russians, Poles, Estonians, Latvians, Ukrainians, and others, focusing their hatred on the classes that earlier had kept them in check. Have you read a book by Tom Wolfe called The Bonfire of the Vanities? It was published nearly 14 years ago in 1987 and is still in print. My sponsor, National Vanguard Books, sells a paperback edition for about $8. It's a masterful novel about a man who lives in a comfortable and secure artificial world and manages to avoid contact with reality altogether until one day he makes a slip and is yanked out of his security blanket and into the real world. It's not a pleasant experience for him, and it's easy to see why he preferred to avoid reality for as long as he could. But Tom Wolfe's protagonist in The Bonfire of the Vanities, Sherman McCoy, is a man without principles or ideals, a typical rich New York capitalist. You wouldn't expect him to care what is happening in the real world as long as he can live in his artificial world, protected from contact with the real world by his money. I like to think that not everyone is like Sherman McCoy. In particular, I like to think that my listeners have principles and ideals, that they do care what's happening in the real world. So, why have there been no pogroms in America? Why has not even a single righteous Gentile gone into a major Hollywood studio with a shotgun and even begun to clean the place out? There hasn't been a significant bombing in New York since the World Trade Center bombing 8 years ago, and that was done by a bunch of Muslims. What's the matter with our people? Why do we let our enemies walk all over us without striking back? I was talking about this with a member of my organization, the National Alliance, a couple of months ago. I told him that I thought the reason is that our people have been comfortable for so long that we've become soft. The only white people who aren't soft, the Ku Kluxers and the like at the bottom of the white socioeconomic ladder, aren't smart enough to organize a good bombing or a good studio cleaning party. And the professionals who do have the technical skills and the organizational ability to put together a good pogrom are too spoiled by comfortable living to take the risks involved. It's too bad the economy has been so good for so long, I said. It's made cowards of us. He had a slightly different view. He's a professional himself who's doing quite well in his business. But most middle-class and upper-middle-class whites don't really feel secure, he said. They are living well at the moment, but very precariously. They're spending a lot of money, but they're up to their ears in debt. They have big mortgage payments to make every month on their $400,000 homes, big car payments on their BMWs and Mercedes, huge credit card bills to pay as a result of their wives' weekly shopping excursions to the malls. They feel that they are living in houses built of cards, and any disturbance will bring everything down in ruins. If they miss a payment, they will be out on the sidewalk with bill collectors tramping through their repossessed homes and carrying away all of their worldly goods. This is what makes them afraid of any exposure, afraid to speak out, afraid to do anything except slip a $100 bill into an envelope and send it to us anonymously. Well, probably there's a lot of truth in his explanation for the inaction of our people, although it's difficult for me to sympathize much with folks who have let themselves be emasculated by their craving for wealth, regardless of the details. To the extent that his explanation is correct, it is evidence of the need for us to structure a post-revolutionary society quite differently from this one. For example, credit undoubtedly is a very handy thing sometimes, but encouraging people to get themselves into debt by spending money they haven't yet earned seems to me an antisocial activity. I've always been in favor of letting individuals have the freedom to harm themselves in any way they want, to take up cigarette smoking, to try skydiving without a parachute, to borrow money and become debt slaves. Not only am I in favor of freedom, but this sort of thing can have the eugenic effect of weeding the genes of the foolish and the undisciplined from our gene pool, if we don't make the mistake of rescuing them from their folly. But when a particular folly weakens the whole society, debt slavery on a large scale, for example, it's time for the leadership to step in and restructure institutions in such a way as to minimize the harm. Well, that's getting away from the main idea I want to talk about today, and that is the passivity of our people, the non-resistance of our people to the Jews' campaign of genocide against us. Why don't we resist? Why do we just watch what the Jews are doing to us without any significant reaction? Is it callous indifference of the Sherman-McCoy variety? The attitude that as long as we personally aren't threatened, it doesn't matter what happens to the race? Is it concern about the precariousness of our personal situations, as one of our National Alliance members suggested to me? Is it simply cowardice resulting from being too comfortable and too secure for too long, as I often have suggested? Is it that even our independent thinkers have a little lemming in them and simply refuse to face difficult truths, truths that demand personal sacrifice from us? Are we all in denial, like the female lemming who sent me a hate letter after last week's broadcast? Do we look at the films coming out of Hollywood which more and more blatantly and unmistakably are encouraging impressionable young white girls to bed down with jungle bunnies and try to find some other explanation for why the Jews are doing it, some explanation which doesn't demand that we grab our shotguns and head for Hollywood. Actually, it may be all of the above. It may be that the more self-centered individuals among us haven't yet realized that their fate is tied to the fate of the race. And it also may be that, as a society, prolonged prosperity has left us too soft, too unwilling to take chances, and that this timidity has been exacerbated by a feeling of precariousness from being financially overextended. A sharp economic downturn undoubtedly will help a lot by knocking down the house of cards many people feel they are living in now. But it won't do much to cure ingrained selfishness or ingrained cowardice. That will take a generation or more of hard living. As for the limiting factor, I do believe that there is some of that in most of us. We want to be liked. We want to be popular. We all flinch at the thought of public censure. No one wants to be condemned or ridiculed or hated or even considered weird or odd by the people around him. There's a tendency to conform, to go along with the crowd in all of us. The true lemming is completely dominated by that tendency, but it is present to some extent in all of us. When I was a child, independent thinking was fashionable, and so I was taught always to do what I knew to be right rather than what everyone else was doing. I believe that teaching helped me overcome the lemming factor in myself. In recent years, independent thinking has fallen out of favor, and going along with the crowd has become fashionable instead. And so modern teaching tends to strengthen the lemming factor. That, I'm afraid, is just something we'll have to live with until we ourselves, instead of our enemies, are in a position to determine what is fashionable. So, being realistic, I think that we must count on most of our fellow white Americans remaining passive as long as conditions remain approximately as they are now. My great fear is that they will remain passive even when the current Jewish program to abolish our Bill of Rights reaches its final stages and the politicians are told to enact speech crime laws and to round up privately owned firearms. Certainly, the lemmings are ready to go along with that now. In every major newspaper, you can read their letters to the editor, and on every radio talk show, you can hear them parroting what they have learned from the Jews, namely, that the First Amendment was never intended to protect offensive speech, speech which hurts other people's feelings, and that the Second Amendment has nothing to do with private rights, but only with the rights of government militias. They spout this nonsense with the confidence that comes from knowing that all of the other lemmings agree with them. And this air of confidence does tend to some degree to intimidate the independent thinkers who know it's nonsense. Being a bit of a cynic, my guess is that when the secret police start locking people up for saying or publishing something which is politically incorrect, the independent thinkers won't make much of a fuss. Most of them will look the other way and pretend not to notice what's happening if the economy remains stable, and they are still comfortable. If someone else can arrange to damage the economy or otherwise make our people a bit less comfortable, then more power to him. I wish him success. But unlike Bill Clinton's pal Michael Milken, I know nothing about manipulating the economy. And so I will continue to do what I'm doing now, which is to provide information and inspiration to as many people as I can until the police come to lock me up as a speech criminal. Actually, I don't mean for that to sound pessimistic. I'm rather encouraged by the response I'm getting now. That response has grown enormously during the past few years. It's a response from a minority of a minority, but it's still very encouraging to me. The minority to which I refer is the 2 or 3% of the white population, which is essentially non-living in character. The 2 or 3% which has enough independence of mind to overcome its living tendencies and to think for itself, at least under ideal circumstances, even if it lacks the courage or the motivation to act. That's a minority of 2 or 3 million white adults just in the United States. I'm reaching a minority of that minority now and getting an increasingly positive response. And I believe the response will continue to grow. I believe that in the reasonably near future, I'll be reaching a majority of the independent-minded minority, and maybe even receiving a favorable response from a majority of that majority of the independent-minded minority. Anyway, that's my goal at the moment, and I can see it coming closer month by month. I also should tell you, however, that I receive many letters from people who lament the fact that I haven't made much headway among the great majority of the white population, that is, among the lemmings. They tell me things I mustn't say lest I alienate the majority, and they also tell me the things that I should say in order to gain the support of the majority. But mostly, they give me pessimistic reports of their observations that the majority of the white public is still solidly in the grip of the Jews, and they want to know why I don't try harder to win the support of the public. And this tells me that no matter how many times I explain it, they still don't understand that there are two distinctly different types of white person making up the public, and that my broadcasts are aimed entirely at just one of those types. The two types are the lemming and the non-lemming. The lemming is not interested in what is true and what is false, or in what is good and what is evil. In fact, those distinctions have no meaning, no reality for the lemming. In deciding what to believe, the lemming is interested only in what the other lemmings believe, or in what he thinks they believe. It doesn't do any good at all to try to change a lemming's opinion by showing him factual evidence or by appealing to his ideals. The only way to change a lemming's opinion is to trick him into believing that all of the other lemmings have changed their opinions. And I suppose that under the right circumstances, I might be able to do that with some lemmings. The Jews do it all the time with all of the lemmings. But I really can't compete with the Jews at trickery. To compete effectively, I would need to own a couple of television networks. So I don't even try. I direct my message entirely toward that minority of the white population which actually cares what's true and what's good. And it's not always easy to persuade even the people who care. A lot of them don't want to have to deal with the responsibility of knowing the truth if it's an unpopular or uncomfortable truth. A lot of them would like to continue blending in with the herd. They would like to continue running with the lemmings even though they themselves are not true lemmings. That's why, after all of my efforts, I still am reaching only a minority of a minority. But with this minority which does care about what is true and what is good, I am making progress. With this minority, I have an advantage over the Jews. They have the television networks and the Hollywood studios and Madison Avenue and the government and the mainstream churches on their side. But I have the truth and right on my side. And that is what will win with those who care. have won the hearts and minds of a majority of those who care, even though they make up only a rather small minority of the total white population. I will have the means to begin competing with the Jews for the support of the Lennings, too, even if those means must be unconventional. But for now, the only ones who count are those who care. And our problem is not just to provide the truth to these people, but to inspire them to act on the truth, to do whatever it takes to make them overcome their passivity, even if that means organizing another series of savings and loan failures the way Bill and Hillary Clinton and their buddies did a few years ago, but on a bigger scale this time. Well, as I said earlier, I don't know how to do that myself. I'll have to depend on other people who care to figure out how to make our fellow white Americans less comfortable and less secure than they are now, and I'll stick to providing truth and inspiration. Thanks for being with me again today.